Hi, welcome to Trained. At Nike, we believe that greatness isn't born, it's trained. And that means more than just a workout. Each episode, we'll bring you conversations with leading experts in what we call the five facets of fitness: training, recovery, nutrition, mindset, and sleep. I'm Ryan Flaherty, Senior Director of Performance at Nike. I train some of the world's best athletes, like Saquon Barkley, Russell Wilson, and Marcus Mariota. Today, we're focusing on how positive self-talk and building a resilient mindset is foundational to progress in training and in life. You're listening to Trained, presented by Nike.
I talk to myself a lot on the golf course. Sometimes maybe too much. But I always think to verbalize something, to get something out there, I think it's always more powerful. I mean, you can think something and that's great, but if you put it out there, and whether that's just to yourself or to someone else, you know, that's a very powerful thing. Even just using positive words is a big thing for me. And that's just, you know, that's what self-talk is. And, you know, anytime I feel a little bit nervous on the golf course, I think, okay, you're going to be mentally tight and you're going to be physically loose.
That's Rory McIlroy. One of the world's top golfers, he trains often and is an advocate for holistic fitness. I got the chance to sit down with Rory after he had just finished playing a major championship. It was a great moment to talk to Rory about the power of mindset. He just finished turning around his game after a rough start that weekend, and he had so much to say about how and why his mindset is the biggest focus for his training. When you watch Rory play, talent is one of the first words that comes to mind. But it's not the first thing he'd want you to notice. And that's because talent obscures the work and effort that goes into mastering his craft. Rory has played golf since he was a kid. He grew up 5 minutes from a golf course, and he was hooked early on. He has spent decades honing the basic fundamentals to be the player that he is today. And he knows better than anyone that golf is a long game. And talent alone won't carry you through all 18 holes over 4 consecutive days. Instead, it takes work. And it especially takes persistence and a positive mindset. That kind of mental stamina is difficult to come by, and it's probably one of the most valuable things Rory has cultivated as a player. Rory is a proponent of setting small, specific goals throughout the game in order to succeed. Just before we talked, Rory had made it through the tournament by focusing on tangible goals, one shot at a time. This game within a game is something a lot of the athletes I work with do too, no matter the sport. In football, this might mean getting an entire team to focus on getting a first down, or in tennis, winning the next point. That takes focus and dedication, to maintain perspective in the here and now while keeping an eye on the larger goal. But Rory is on his way to mastering it. Rory is also part of a generation of golfers that makes training a priority, and he had a lot to say about creating good habits when it comes to nutrition, sleep, and recovery. Maintaining those good habits has enabled him to be one of the world's best golfers. And in talking to Rory, that commitment comes through. It's clear to me that no matter what Rory puts his mind to, whether that was business, writing, or even another sport like rugby, he'd be successful. Golf just happened to get to him first. So now, let's get to the interview. Rory, thanks for taking the time to join us today, man. Really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Glad to be on.
Yeah. So we want to jump in a little bit into what got you started in golf.
My family, my dad, you know, it's something that I've always been around, and I grew up 5 minutes from our local golf course. You know, my dad was a decent player, still is a decent player to this day. You know, all my dad's family played golf. They grew up around the golf club as well. So it was just something that was a part of my life from the very beginning. You know, golf to me is as natural as, you know, it was learning how to eat with a knife and fork. It just, you know, it's always been there. So, you know, I couldn't imagine a life without golf, I guess.
Did you specialize right away, or did you play other sports growing up?
I played other sports growing up. I thought that was very important. Even though golf, I was always better at golf than I was at other sports, but I still played. I played a little bit of rugby. I played soccer, played a little bit of tennis. Played field hockey. I played a bunch of stuff, and I think when I think back, I think it definitely helped me.
Yeah,
you know, you look at some of the best athletes in the world, and they've always, to me, it seems like they haven't just specialized mm-hmm. in one. They've played a few different sports, and there's always been one that they excelled at. But You know, I think to have that little bit of variety is a good thing.
Yeah, it's evident when you watch you play and swing because you're a really good athlete. So at what point did you actually make that turn, though? Was there an age where it was time for you to actually just go all in on golf?
Yeah, I think everyone that wants to excel at a certain sport, there is that crossroads where, okay, you know, you're going to have to, you know, sacrifice playing these sports to really concentrate on the one that you do excel at. For me, that probably happened when I was around 14. But I think those developmental years, you know, growing up as a toddler and a kid up until my teenage years, playing all those other sports helped with that athleticism and hand-eye coordination that ultimately helped me in my golf game. But yeah, I mean, it was probably around 14 when I, you know, my mom didn't want me playing rugby either. That was, yeah. You know, rugby was one of my favorite sports, and she didn't really want me getting hurt. So she sort of made the decision, right, you're going to concentrate on golf.
Now, speaking about mindset, I mean, there is probably no game in the world that requires, you know, you have a resilient mindset like golf does.
Yeah.
How much of a role does your mindset work and training play into what you do holistically in terms of your training and fitness?
Yeah, it's massive. And I think you mentioned a word there, resilient or resilience. That's a big word for me, whether that be with your body, with your mind, with everything. I think the more resilient you can be, the better performance that you're going to have.
Yeah. What age did you start to recognize the importance of your mind in your game?
It's been, for me with the mind stuff, it's sort of been ebbs and flows. There's been time where I've really needed to concentrate on it. And there's been times where it's happened more naturally for me. But I'd say over the last, I'd say the last 6 or 7 years, I've really, you know, tried to put some things in place and put a structure around what I do in terms of mentally training myself to get the best out of myself on the golf course.
You just played in the PGA Championship this weekend, and you know Thursday and Friday weren't going great, and they, you know, momentum was kind of against you. How did you mentally flip it to be able to come back and have a really strong weekend? What shifted for you? What did you tell yourself to get it turned around?
Yeah, so for me, you know, I had a horrible start on Friday. I was 5 over through 3 holes, and again, it's experience, knowing that I've been in this position before, and I've had success from this position before. So again, it's a comfort thing knowing that, you know, there's a lot of golf left. You try and set these little mini goals throughout the round. So when I had that bad start, it was like, okay, let's make 2 birdies in the next 7 holes or whatever it is. Just set these little goals for yourself. And then, you know, once I was making the turn on Friday, I said to my caddy, I said, okay, I'm not going to let myself shoot any worse than the score I shot yesterday, which was 2 over par. And then I, you know, you have a goal and you have you something to aim for. And it's not a, you know, I think if I had a said, okay, I just want to make the cut, that brings its own sort of pressure.
Yeah.
And, you know, so don't make it about the result. Make it about, you know, something else.
Yeah.
You know,
and again, something that's tangible, right? Something small.
Yeah. Something small, something attainable. And, that was my thing. I'm going to shoot a better score today than I shot yesterday. And I ended up doing that. And then that's what turned the whole week around for me. I was just grateful to be there for the weekend. You know, it looked like I wasn't going to be there for the weekend. And then I just wanted to make the most of the opportunity that I had, that I had 2 more days to play. And I just, you know, I want to give it my all and see what I can do.
Yeah. And that's almost like the game within the game, as they say, right?
100%. If you know, you don't need to do everything at once. You could chip away at it. And, you know, I think everyone needs a mantra. So whether that's, let's get one first down, you know, and just keep going on that. Or, you know, I watched this documentary, Searching for Greatness, with Jerry Rice. Yeah. And his thing was, I know I could catch the football. That was it. I knew I could catch the football. I knew I could catch the football. Arthur Ashe, I read this great book, Obstacle is the Way. And Arthur Ashe had a mantra when he went out on court, was to be physically loose and mentally tight. Forwards. That was it. And if you keep saying that to yourself over and over, that becomes what you're trying to do. It's not about winning a football game. It's not about trying to win a tennis match. It's just about that.
Yeah.
And then if you do that more and more, you know, then the result almost is a byproduct.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the best way to be. Fair.
Absolutely. What is maybe a part of your process that is you do every day? Something that is a part of your everyday that you never miss?
So I do a thing, and I've started to do this probably over the past year. I call them my remedials, like my remedial exercises. So I breathe for at least 10 minutes a day. So I make sure that I put my feet up on a block and I make sure that I breathe properly. And that's something that I never thought about breathing until about a year ago. And just to make sure that, you know, and I've had some problems with my ribs. You know, I've had a stress fracture in one of my ribs and, you know, and that's because of where my rib cage sat. So I'm trying to get my rib cage down. I'm trying to breathe through my diaphragm and breathe the right way. And that's really helped. So we all breathe, but we never really think about, do we breathe properly? Mm-hmm. So if there's one thing in my routine that I do every day, I breathe.
That's amazing, man. That's really cool to hear you say that. Because it's something that everybody listening can start to utilize in their own life. Because there's something about breathing that it can bring you back into balance, especially when life feels like it's getting out of control.
Yeah.
Do you meditate?
Yeah, I do. Okay. I meditate. So my wife has a meditation app that she puts on every night before we go to bed. I don't need it to fall asleep, but she does. But it has become part of our routine.
Yeah.
And I meditate, you know, every once in a while. I wouldn't say every day, but if I get my breathing in, that is almost like meditation
to
me. You know, I close my eyes and I focus on my breath, and I do that for 5 or 10 minutes, and all of a sudden you open your eyes and the world seems like a bit of a better place.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, Rory will take us through his training routine and share one of his mantras. Stick around, we'll be right back. If you're a trainer, join a community of trainers looking to make fitness better for everyone. Learn from leading experts in performance, mindset, nutrition, recovery, and sleep, and get an exclusive 30% discount on Nike gear. Apply at nike.com/ntcpro. How does self-talk play a role in your mindset and your game?
It plays a massive role. I talk to myself a lot on the golf course. Sometimes maybe too much, but I always think to verbalize something, to get something out there, I think it's always more powerful. I mean, you can think something and that's great, but if you put it out there, and whether that's just to yourself or to someone else, you know, that's a very powerful thing.
Mm-hmm.
And again, using positive words, you know, one of the things I really tried to do this year is not use the word should. I've tried to wipe that completely out of my vocabulary, because should is a very, you know, I should have done this. It's just not a word that brings a lot of positivity.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I associate it with negativity. So even just using positive words is a big thing for me. And that's just, you know, that's what self-talk is. And it doesn't have to be about really, you know, aggressively motivating yourself. It can be, you know, it can be calming. It can be, as I say, you know, I one of the things that I've taken from this year is that little mantra, or that bit of self-talk from Arthur Ashe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anytime I feel a little bit nervous on the golf course, you know, I think, okay, you're going to be mentally tight and you're going to be physically loose. Because the last thing I want to be is the other way around. If I'm physically tight and I'm trying to hit a shot, I'm guiding it and I'm not, that's never going to work.
Mm-hmm.
So the more I can just let my best swing come through, and just let that happen, that's when I'm going to have success.
Yeah. We had talked a little bit earlier about sleep. How big of a role does sleep play now, and how much of a importance are you placing on sleep in your training?
Yeah, a lot more than I used to. I used to use it as a badge of honor that, you know, oh, I can get by on 4 or 5 hours of sleep a night and I'm fine. And for a little bit, yes, you can. And that, you know, I think having a lack of sleep puts you in that fight or flight mode,
mm-hmm.
and you can go with that for so long, but there's going to be a time where you crash and it's not going to work. So I think what I've been doing over the past, you know, year or two is I've definitely become more accountable in terms of, I know I get the best out of myself if I get my 8 hours a night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what I really try to do. And that's, you know, and that's preparing the day before and the night before and making sure that, you know, I want to make sure that I'm finished eating, you know, 1.5 to 2 hours before I go to bed, you know, and there's a lot of that different stuff as mm-hmm. well. So, you know, I eat earlier, I get into bed earlier. It just, that whole routine from, you know, 6 o'clock at night to when I fall asleep, it's all prepping myself to get to sleep at the right time and, yeah. and get a good quality night's sleep, because I know the next day I'm going to get the best out of myself.
I mean, you guys travel a ton.
Yeah.
It's tough to get good rest. And mm-hmm. I mean, and you're required to play at your absolute best. How do you kind of create some sense of normalcy while you travel?
My thing with jet lag and traveling is, if you have an opportunity to get some rest, even if that's in the middle
yeah.
of the day, take it.
Just take
you
it,
know,
yeah.
take the nap. And research has constantly been telling us this over the last few years, that, you know, it is the most important thing in terms of recovery and then going on from that performance.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the sleep expert we had, Dr. Matthew Walker, said it's the greatest performance enhancing drug on the planet, is sleep.
Yeah.
Because everything, you know, all of our muscles repair, our cells repair. I mean, we go through so many different recovery processes throughout the night in sleep that if you're skipping any of those phases of sleep, you're going to miss out on that.
Yeah.
Okay. So I want to transition a little bit to your training. What are some of the key tenets of your training routine?
Yeah. So I think I'll go back to the start. I really started to train when I was around 21 because, you know, if most people that play golf will know this, it takes quite a toll on your lower back. Mm. And I was having issues with my lower back when I was 19, 20 years of age.
Wow.
Which is not, you know, that's not yeah. desirable. And I wasn't getting any better just by lying on a physio bed and getting treatment. And, you know, it just wasn't going away. You know, mm-hmm. I was having this pain in my lower back. So I went down a different route, which was, okay, I'm going to get stronger. And I'm going to become more robust and more resilient. And that's when I started to train and, you know, train in a way to have longevity, to make sure that my career wasn't only going to last a certain number of years. If I want to play golf until I'm 50 years old, you know, I believe that I should be able to do that. Mm-hmm. So that's why I really started to train. And from that, I started to really, you know, train hard sort of end of 2010, start of 2011. And if you look at my career since, that's correlated with most of my success
yeah.
is when I got stronger and I trained and, you know, my body movements became more consistent. So it's become a big part of my life.
Yeah. So if you play in a tournament Thursday through Sunday, do you train in any days throughout that?
Yeah. Thursday and Saturdays
okay.
usually is my routine. I'll do like it's like a 35, 40 minute activation sort of prehab workout on Thursday morning and then on Saturday as well. And I feel like that Thursday one carries me through to Friday. And it's not as if I'm not doing anything. I'm still, as I said, I'm
sure.
doing those remedial exercises
yeah.
and I'm doing the stuff that I need to do. But I think those lifts on Thursday and Saturday, they carry me through the tournament.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can keep you feeling strong.
Yeah.
So in terms of your training, what are some of the strength exercises or exercises you use to feel the strongest or that you like the most?
Yeah, so for me, over the last couple of years, I've had a couple of rib issues, mm-hmm. which come from a weak and tight, you know, mid back or mm-hmm. thoracic spine. Mm-hmm. So a lot of scap stuff, a lot of really, you know, scapular stabilization. And, you know, so that's been quite a big focus for me over the last couple of years, is really making sure that everything around shoulder girdle, mid back is really locked in. And, you know, breathing comes into that as well in terms of making sure my rib cage is staying down and it doesn't get high and my chest doesn't sort of get out and sort of and just into bad posture, really.
Yeah.
You know, so
it's
posture
not add more stuff.
Tension. Yeah, there. Exactly.
Do you do hip stuff to strengthen your hips?
Yeah. So the thing with my hips is it's more mobility for me.
Because you fire those things, man. I mean,
yeah, and especially my right hip, because I'll really side bend right and fire my right side through, and that can always get tight on me. So I do a bunch of hip mobility stuff. One of my favorite exercises is a goblet squat, because I can squat lower and I can hold that position down there for a long time, and that just for me opens up my whole you know, my hips and I love that. So if I'm feeling sort of tight or a restriction in that right hip that sometimes I get, you know, I won't stretch it. I grab a 25 or a 30 pound weight, I hold it in my chest and I do a few goblet squats and I hold it down there. And, you know, I do that for maybe two or three sets and I feel so much better.
So take us through like an example day. So if you are, it's a strength day for you, you're going into the gym, take us through from the start to the finish of like what exercises you're doing and, you know, reps and sets.
So a strength day for me really consists of, at the minute, four exercises. Mm. Like, it's not, I mean, it's very simple. It's just to get that hormonal response in your body. So I'll warm up and do some, you know, we call it like a shoulder distraction, you know, just making sure that the shoulders are, you know, that's something that, you know, as I said, is something I really try to focus on to make sure that this whole sort of scapula and shoulder area is warmed up before I start to do anything. So I do a, you know, a couple of sets of sort of shoulder distractions, which is just circular motions with a, you know, a weight, a 20-pound dumbbell. And then I go into some, you know, scap prehab stuff, like push-ups, scap push-ups, yep. And, mm-hmm. you know, all that sort of stuff, and try to get that warmed up. Body weight squats, just, you know, really try to just get your body moving. Mm-hmm. And then if it's a strength day, what I've been doing recently is trap bar deadlifts. Mm-hmm. They're something that I feel... It's a low, you know, sometimes if I get into heavy-ish squats.
Yeah, it's low risk.
So the trap bar, it's low risk. You're not, you know, and that's something that, you know, I need to go and play the next week. I don't need to be feeling.
yeah.
So.
You're not powerlifting. You're,
yeah, exactly. So trap bar deadlift, you know, I'll start off by putting 245s on either side, and that's sort of, I'll do maybe two or three warm-up sets of 8 or 10 on that, and then incrementally increase the weight to, you know, maybe do, you know, I'll end and maybe do two or three sets of two reps on, I don't know, 250 pounds.
Wow.
So it's not hugely heavy, but it's enough.
That's heavy.
But it's enough just to get some strength and some of that hormonal.
Yeah.
And then I'll take some of that weight off and do maybe two sets of more hypertrophy just to sort of end that exercise.
Yeah.
So maybe, you know, two sets of 8 reps on 195 mm-hmm. or something like that.
Yeah.
And then I'll move on to incline, like a 15-degree incline dumbbell press. Mm-hmm. And again, go through the same sort of thing, you know, warm up with, you know, two or three sets of 8 or 10, and then incrementally work my way up in weight. So I'm doing, you know, two or three sets of 2 reps.
Yeah.
And then again, same thing, you know, go back to maybe 2 sets of 8 just as a sort of finisher on that exercise. And then I'll do neutral grip pull-ups. And again, I'll go from body weight to then putting some weight around my waist so that, you know, it's a struggle to do, you know, 2 reps or, mm-hmm. you know, so whether that's a, you know, 25 or a 45 plate in between my legs. And I do that. And then I do what I've been doing as well. So that's 3 exercises, really. And then I'll do some either farmer's walks or side planks or something just to really engage my core. And that's what a strength day looks like for me.
No,
it's 45 minutes. I get in, I get out. It's not too complicated, but it works for me.
What I like what you're saying, and it's a great point that I want to make, is that you seem very intentional with what you're training. It's
yes.
like it serves a direct purpose to your sport, your game, and your body.
Yeah.
Number two is, I feel like you're also at the point in your career where you know what you need.
Yeah.
With golf being a sport where it's one movement,
mm-hmm.
consist over yeah. and over and over mm. again. You know, in a lot of the other sports that I work with athletes, so much of it is just keeping them healthy, right?
Yes.
We know based on research that there's a couple ways you can look at, you know, risk of injury. You look at, first is injury history.
Yep.
But second is actually asymmetry and imbalance. And so how do you deal with that in your training? How do you kind of bring in some elements in training to help with that kind of asymmetry of what a golf swing is?
Yeah, for sure. So if you look at how a golfer sets up, I mean, you know, you look at my posture, my left shoulder is always going to be higher than my right.
Mm-hmm.
My left pec is usually more tense than my right just because of this.
Mm-hmm.
And then because of that, my right side and my back gets, you know, it's that transverse.
Absolutely.
You know, it's how it is. So as you said, there is a lot of asymmetry there. And then, you know, I'll send posture picks back to, you know, my trainer and Cairo back in Florida during tournaments. And they'll recommend a couple exercises to do during that week. And a lot of times it's making sure that the right side is engaged as much as the left
sure,
side. So, you know, it could be as simple as do 3 sets of, you know, 30-second holds of a right side plank or something
mm-hmm.
just to try and balance your body out. But it's very simple. But I it's something that when I started to train, I think the first 6 months was really trying to get some sort of balance back in my body because the golf swing is so one side dominant.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of single leg stuff, single arm stuff, you know. And that's why I don't use a barbell when I'm doing stuff pressing, or it's always a dumbbell, yeah. Because I know that I'll be able to get it up some way, but it won't be efficient and it won't be correct form. So, yeah. You know, I'm always using dumbbells instead of using the barbell, because I know that I still have imbalances in my body, and I'm trying to make those as close as possible to each other, because I know that it's always going to be in there.
I want to talk a little bit about recovery, because recovery is, I mean, that's where your body adapts. That's where your body grows and changes and develops. So how big of a role does recovery play? Can you take us through a little bit of what your routine is?
Yeah, so recovery plays a massive role, especially those weeks off where you're, you know, I feel my recovery on those weeks where I'm practicing a lot and I'm hitting a lot of balls and I'm in the gym and I'm you know, getting ready to go out and play, that's when the recovery side is the most important. So getting some treatment. You know, I had a little bit of a, you know, as I said, my right hip was giving me a little bit of an issue earlier in the year, or my left knee. Getting some acupuncture, getting some blood flow to there. You know, I've started to use, anytime I feel like I've a little bit of an ache or a niggle, I've started to use this Tesla coil. You know, so, you know, electric, magnetic, cellular redevelopment, all that sort of stuff. So I can lie and watch TV for 45 minutes and lie in a Tesla coil, and you don't feel anything, but, you know, there's some research out there that suggests that it can help. So that's something that I've started to use in terms of recovery. And then, you know, hydration is massive.
Yeah.
Hydration is really, really big. Making sure that you eat the right things. And that's not just for recovery, that's everything. And I think one of my big things over the past couple of years is trying to get enough fats in my diet. I always used to stay away from, not stay away, but I used to really try and limit fats because, you know, that's what I thought was healthy.
Massive misconception,
you know,
yeah.
And it's not, like, you're not going there and you're eating a ton of fat, but it's the right fats and not being scared to, you know, I would only used to, or like, I'll have like a quarter of an avocado. It's like, well, just have the whole avocado. It's not a bad thing. So, and I think as well, especially if, you know, going back to what we were saying at the start about the mental game, fats are so good for your brain.
Yeah.
And I sort of knew that. I took like omega-3 supplements, but just other fats and seeds and nuts and
olive oil.
Of that. It's so good for cognitive health and your brain. So I've really made a conscious effort to have more of that in my diet.
You're making a point here too, which is I like to make every podcast, is you can't really talk about any one of these things without the other, right?
I mean,
they're all...
It's as you say, holistic.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
It's a real holistic approach. You need to create these habits and make them all go together, because that's, you know, it has to be cohesive and it has to all work.
Yeah, and they work together. I mean, if you don't sleep well, then you're not going to, you know, train well and recover. It's just all of they all work very closely.
Yeah, exactly.
So talking about your diet now, so do you follow any specific diet? Do you follow macros? Like, what do you eat like?
Yeah, I've sort of tried to see, over the last year or so, I've tried to stay away from gluten for the most part, and I've tried to limit my dairy intake. And gluten is more for, you know, bloating and I don't have an intolerance, but I know that if I have too much of it, it just doesn't make me feel great. I'm just a little bit lethargic. And then dairy, I mean, I love milk and I love Greek yogurt and I used to eat a ton of dairy, but I get allergies, and then sometimes those allergy symptoms were happening to me not in allergy season. So then I was just getting so clogged up, and then I just tried to limit my dairy, and even this year, you know, we're right in the middle of allergy season and it's been so much better.
Wow.
So that's just been something that I've tried to do as well.
That's great.
But, you know, I'll sort of eat anything, you know, wild meats or, you know, bison, or, you know, I sort of just try and mix it up and have a variety. I try not to eat the same thing every day, more because, you know, it's boring. And even if you're eating a really good meal and it's the same thing every day, it's, you know, that's not that good for you either.
I think,
you know, variety is a really good thing.
So you mentioned, you know, about mantras. Do you have any specific mantras that you say to yourself?
You know, there's a few P's that I try to practice: perspective, persistence, perception, poise. You know, poise is a big one for me. I think if I keep repeating those to myself, and I use those P words a lot, they helped me. They, mm-hmm. you know, and you can pick and choose what you need at a certain time, whether it's perspective or whether it's poise or persistence or perseverance or, you know, all those P's. I'm a big advocate for those.
You obviously are one of the best golfers in the world, one of the best golfers ever. Is there something more than golf for you that you want to leave a legacy behind for? Is there something you want to be remembered for?
Yes. I think there's more holistic ways that people can get better through mindset, through meditation, through diet, through exercise. So I want to be an advocate for that. If I can leave the world in a slightly better place in terms of people being more knowledgeable about what they can do to live healthier lives, I think that's, you know, if I can be a part of that, I think that would be awesome.
Perfect way to end it. I mean, this has been a privilege for me. So thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I really enjoyed talking with Rory. He had something thoughtful to say about each facet of fitness. But in the course of our conversation, the one thing that really struck me was this. I loved what Rory had to say about should. Should represents someone else's expectations for you. And when we turn that word against ourselves, it always comes from a place of judgment, and that does nothing for us. We have thousands and maybe millions of thoughts every day, things we tell ourselves constantly. Your word might not be should, but whatever it is, try to notice when you say something to yourself that's harsh or judgmental. This is an especially great place to start working on your mindset if meditation isn't your thing. Just notice when your word comes up, because that awareness is everything. Then, when you're ready, try to replace that with something more accepting and realistic. The human brain is incredibly powerful, but it's also biased to remember negative things more than positive ones. It takes work and a dedication to other facets like sleep and nutrition to be able to maintain a positive mindset. But I promise you, it will make all the difference. Trained is produced by Nike Training Club. If you're looking to take your training to the next level, check out the Nike Training Club app. In it, you'll find holistic guidance and free workouts designed by Nike experts. Or go even further and enjoy a 7-day free trial of our premium subscription service, NTC Premium, available now in the U.S. With NTC Premium, you can get guidance from start to finish with programs and workouts designed by Nike Master Trainers. You also get in-depth nutrition and wellness content. Go check it out. That's Nike Training Club app, available on both Android and iOS. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next time with a special episode where I'll be talking with three Nike Master Trainers, Kirsty Godso, Bettina Gozo, and Joe Holder, about how they got started and their approaches to the five facets of fitness. This is Trained. Talk to you soon.
Consult your doctor before engaging in an exercise program of any kind, especially if you have a medical condition. Use good judgment and common sense about your own fitness level and ability when engaging in a training program. If something doesn't feel right, stop immediately and seek medical attention as necessary.